Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Daniel Sanderson is best known in the football space for founding seminal indie magazine Mundial way back in 2014. We spoke at the beginning of January of this year about the early days of the publication, how it evolved from a spare time project to an internationally recognised brand over the following decade, and adjusting to life after the mag. But there's plenty more to his story than the successes of Mundial. Dan shares how his creative journey began with a love of film and wanting to make them, before heading to university to study it and quickly realising that he didn't. A love of writing was discovered in the process, and after knocking on a few doors, they began to open. An assist from his dad in the form of some time off work enabled him to explore an opportunity, and the rest is history. Well played, Dad. There are some key learnings here on perseverance, perspective, the value of support, and, as we've heard across many episodes now, the importance of backing yourself. Hello, mate. How's it going?
Hi, mate. I think echo cancellation is on now because I've chosen not headphones.
Perfect, yeah. I can only hear myself once, and even that's enough sometimes. How's your day going, mate?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was on a bit of a delayed train, so apologies for that.
No, mate, I can see the reasons falling from the sky as to why any train is delayed today, so don't worry about that, mate. It's all good.
Yeah.
Appreciate you spending the time.
No problem at all.
I've done a little bit of research. Well, I've started to do that this year because last year I kind of just adopted the approach of winging it and finding things out as I go.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm about to say is probably a reflection of my abilities as a host, because all I've come away with is I understand you like a list.
Yeah, which is
I can't even remember what I read that on Mag Culture, maybe.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's it, yeah.
My first question is, what do you make of this rambling over here from the last episode? Is that the kind of stuff?
Yeah, that looks exactly. That looks exactly like how I work. Yeah, I've probably got a 100 pages in the other room that look exactly like that.
I've got to try and kind of translate that now. But
yeah, no, but that's a skill. You've got a better chance than anyone else trying to translate it.
Yeah, I see you got a memo with the color palette for the call as well.
Exactly. Very nice, isn't it? Yeah. Matching.
Not too bad on Palermo vibes.
Yeah, man.
I know we're chatting at a bit of an interesting time for you, like career-wise, which we don't need to get into all of that, but also you're on the verge of leaving this weather that's taken a sharp turn and you're heading to Africa.
I am, yeah. We can touch a little bit on it. Yeah, I left Mundial after 10 years. Was one of the founders, so it's a big change for me to kind of be doing something completely different after so long. And as you say, yeah, I'm going to, on Friday, visa dependent, I'm going to Cote d'Ivoire for the first two games of AFCON, which should be exciting. I've never been to the continent of Africa before, let alone Cote d'Ivoire, so I'm really looking forward to that.
You mentioning the visa pending there just takes me back to needing a 75% appearance rate in your internationals to manage to get a transfer through to a new club.
Yeah, fingers crossed it's very straightforward, but as I do with most things, I've left it quite last minute. So after this call, I'm gonna apply and see how I get on.
It's probably buried somewhere on one of those to-do lists that's just kind of...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's near the top of all seven lists that I've got going on at the moment.
You touched on Mundial there, and that was, I guess, what I was kind of hoping to speak to and interested to hear about from you with that, is less about like the ins and outs of why, and more call it the impact of it, of leaving something that you've been such a big part of and that's also been such a big part of you and maybe begins to kind of form a bit of your identity. Mm-hmm. Like a detachment process that you get from any relationship, I guess. And how does that kind of, how does that feel, I guess?
I mean, I think it's what everyone says, and it's what I've been saying more than not, is that 10 years is a very long time. And give myself slightly more credit, not completely my identity, but a large part of it was that, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and see what was happening with Mundial for the day, and log into the Instagram or the Twitter or whatever and see what we were discussing and what my colleagues had been up to and things that were happening in football, whether that's grassroots or right to the top level, always kind of informed what I was thinking about. I think for various reasons I was ready to go. So there'd been a bit of a process, but nothing could really prepare me for it, and it was difficult at first. It was sort of a semi-immediate stop for certain things in terms of being involved in projects and the magazine and stuff, which was completely the right decision because they need to and will take that on to bigger and better things. But I was a little bit at a loss initially. And it took a few weeks. It was towards the end of the year, which was nice because it was kind of a nice time to wind down and look forward to Christmas and the new year. But the day-to-day initially, just having nothing to do was weird. It was strange, and football didn't stop. So I was kind of seeing things and watching teams and stuff. And Mundial had always been in the back of my mind when I'm kind of consuming football, and it wasn't anymore. However, after like a bit of a break and kind of speaking to people who I've worked with previously in the industry and just mates, it was quite nice. It's been a nice fresh start. However much I love Mundial, you know, 10 years, you kind of get into rhythms of doing the same thing or thinking about things in a certain way. And it was nice to stop and start again and kind of have a refreshed view on the industry that I'm working in, the sport that I love, how I view social media, everything that had been such a huge part of my life for 10 years. My decision was heavily informed by the fact that the Beatles only did 10 years and Seinfeld did 10 years. So it feels like a good time to step away.
If I'd done my research, I could have seen the writing was on the wall.
Yeah,
a long time ago. It's back in 2014.
But you know, it's a good chunk of time to have done something, and I feel like we did. Well, I know that we did great stuff, and they'll carry on doing great stuff. But it was time for me to do something different.
I mean, I don't know if you ever saw it this way. Because there was obviously you started it off with what I presume were your mates, like Seb and are they mates before that, or did they become mates?
Seb, mates, definitely friends, but like me and Seb only really knew each other from Twitter and Instagram, I think was how it kind of initially thing, yeah. And then through sort of like the what are now known as micro communities, I suppose, like we kind of met at a few events and things like that. But they were mates for sure, and they became best mates. Both Seb and Owen. Owen was my boss back at Sabotage Times when I was interning. He was kind of someone influential and who helped me really shape how I wrote. So we'd worked together before, and then when me and Seb were getting the magazine together as just a bit of a fun project, really. We needed someone who had a little bit more experience in that space, and that's where Owen came in. And I wouldn't say we were like very good friends when we first started, but we certainly became it.
They're going to be absolutely devastated to hear that. What a time to find out.
They won't listen to me.
No one does. How do you reconcile yourself with coming to that point with something that you've created? And I guess like when I'm assuming that, like, this is just from my own perspective, there's like a degree of ownership on something that you've made. And how do you get to the point of feeling or being okay with like, okay, this thing that I made is now going to exist without me.
That wasn't as difficult as it may have been 5 or 6 years ago when we were kind of all doing everything. I think over the past 3 or 4 years, and certainly over the past two, when we'd sold the business to a bigger publisher, I'd kind of removed myself from parts of ownership of certain parts of it, and for a variety of reasons. But I have historically been a bit of a micromanager on certain aspects of the business, social and how the brand looks and feels. But as we grew and as we changed as a business, we all had our own distinct roles. So it wasn't like giving away everything at once. There's parts that I was like far less involved in. I probably did less on the magazine than everyone would have liked by the end as well. To be candid, we had a team there that absolutely worked their socks off 4 times a year to get a magazine out, and it belonged to them really. I didn't feel like I was cutting off limbs when I left in terms of the ownership of all of Mundial. That hadn't been the case for several years. We'd sort of dissected it a little bit, and there was parts that were difficult to let go, but there were parts that had either never been mine or I'd kind of moved away from for good or for bad in the last couple of years. So when I see, when you see stuff go out on social and audio CDs that are created that aren't yours, it's still a massive sense of pride because we created Mundial, but it's not mine, and it belongs to sort of everyone on the team.
It's really interesting you say that. It reminds me of something that that Neil Jameson said last summer at Sporting Press, who I started MPLH with, and we were talking about his career up until ESPN and getting to the career stage of creative director at an organization like that. He's less creative at that point. Yeah, I guess you're less in the trenches, as it were, and other responsibilities come with it. So I guess with that, why you got into it in the first place and what you were passionate about is blocked by new responsibilities that don't necessarily kind of align with why the thing exists.
Yeah, I think the new stuff I did, I still loved. You know what I mean? I like working with brands. I like helping amplify Mundial to a larger audience and stuff. So I didn't necessarily think like I was swapping editing the mag or writing for something I hated. I was still super privileged to be able to do stuff. But as the business moved fast and grew fast and had ambitions changed, my skill set was more utilized elsewhere. So I don't think... I think if we all 4 or 5 of us who were kind of the core team at the start thought we were going to just be doing a print magazine forever, maybe we did think that for a while, but that was fairly short sighted, and there was lots of other jobs that needed doing to ensure that was a thing. And I loved doing those. I loved getting out on the road and making films and doing events and making the brand bigger than it actually was. You know, there was like maybe 8 of us by the time I left, maybe 10, and making it feel like we were far bigger, and that was really exciting. So I don't think I was ever like, right, stop doing that now, you need to go and do the board and stuff. I was protected from that by my co-founders. They did a lot more boring stuff than me over the years. So it wasn't like it's time to put childish things aside, go and do business. It was just a different thing to do. So I never felt restricted by that. It was still exciting stuff. It was marketing at the end of the day, which is kind of what I do. So it was just on a bigger scale.
You mentioned marketing there. Is that where you feel most at home? I know like magazines are a have been a focal point of your interests historically. So maybe it was inevitable that you would form one.
Yeah, like that's my in for everything. You know, grew up pre-social media, so I think that's where people got into stuff. I just like learning about things and subcultures and products and footballers and stories, really. And like it's done to death saying that you're into storytelling, and people don't like saying they're into marketing, but like if you do it well, that they're both the same thing. So whether you're still telling a story in a magazine or you're doing it in a book or you're doing it in it on social media through a campaign or you're making a film, you can still do it all with high quality and with attention to detail. And that where that interest came from for me was definitely magazines. So that was a natural path into print. But yeah, storytelling in inverted commas, if we have to call it, that is what I want to do. And more often than not, that's for brands or for leagues or for football teams these days.
You started off your journey, for want of a better word, with internships, which I guess aligned with where your interests were in publishing. So was it a non-negotiable for you that you were going down that path? I mean, for many people, an interest is just an interest, and then there comes the real world of getting a job and kind of navigating life. But was that a non-negotiable element for you where you're like, no, this is where I'm going and this is how I need to do it?
I wouldn't say it's non-negotiable. No, I did film at university. I wanted to make films, and then very fast, like over 3 years, realized I didn't want to make films. But I was doing the course, and there was a creative writing course, so I kind of like enjoyed that element of it and kind of enjoyed watching films, but had no desire to or was like not really cut out for making them. So I still wanted to write, but when I left university, I was getting a job or working and on the dole and et cetera for 2 or 3 years, just doing it in my spare time. And yeah, there was always like, I want to do this. But if he asked me back then, I'd be like, nah, it's probably not going to happen. Because like for every internship, of which there were about 3, where people asked you to take a chance on me, there's probably like 15 unanswered emails or you know, a BBC course that I'd applied for that I didn't get, and films that I'd made that no one even watched. And so I don't think it was non-negotiable. I think I was probably close to giving up by the time that like it started to happen. I was working in a factory with my dad and working for him. Essentially, he was the site manager at this factory, and I got an opportunity to, I think I was just following Sabotage Times on Twitter, and they said, oh, we're taking pictures. And I wrote 3 or 4 pictures for an article. And I remember being at work and being like, they've asked me to come down. Dad, can I have next week off? And he was like, not really. Like, you can't just have time off, but you're also my son. So I have to back you on this. And it was really fortunate that like he let me go, take a few days off, write something for Sabotage, go down and intern there. And that's when I met Owen, and we got on. And Sabotage was run by James Brown, who obviously had Loaded and stuff, who was a kind of big publishing hero of mine. And from then on, it sort of happened. But there was another 3 years where I was, you know, working in off license and writing when I could and writing for free for a lot of stuff, which everyone tells you not to do now. Right, and for all the right reasons that no one should be working for free. But like, if I hadn't done that for 3 or 4 years, I wouldn't have got anywhere. So like, in answer to your question, it wasn't like necessarily I'm not taking no for an answer, because I was almost ready to take no for an answer. I was almost ready to just be like, oh, this is just sort of a hobby of mine, and you know, maybe we'll self publish some stuff down the line, but I'm not going to make a career of it. Because I can't live with my mum and dad forever, and I need to move on. And that's when it's just happened. It started to happen, and
you know, you get a minor success and you get something published on a website, which was absolutely gigantic to me. I couldn't believe it. Gives me a bit more confidence to go, okay, maybe I'll give this another 3 months. Maybe I'll give it another 6 months. We'll keep trying. Maybe I'll follow up on that email that I never got a response to. And then just like that, overnight, 15 years later, things feel like that, you know, that they're there now. But there was no hero's journey to it. There was no like, I'm going to do this until I can't anymore. That thing was coming. Like there was, you know, there was things on the horizon that were going to make me decide to just go, I'll stick it, happy ass.
The flicker almost went out then. And then it's this, a sniff of gold kind of pops up. When you're getting that opportunity with Sabotage and the trip down to London, I guess the possibility of something happening over here makes where you are not seem as final in a way, right?
Yeah, and that wasn't an experience for me growing up, is that like no one really went to London apart from for football, to Wembley.
Show off.
London's spicy in every year, mate. Now, it reminds me of an episode of The Royal Family, actually, where Anthony's going to London, and the whole episode is essentially just that, them going like, be careful, lad. But that's kind of what it was like. But I suppose. I think it's the same as anything, isn't it? You know, until it starts happening, or at least with my mindset, you're like, ah, it's just never going to happen. But I think ego was probably a little bit of played a part in it as well. That's kind of what gave me confidence. It's like, oh, this is on a website and people are reading it. And James Brown, who edited Loaded, is part of this. And people are saying my writing's good and it's getting likes and shares and all of that. Dopamine stuff that we all still thrive off was probably what started kept me interested. And also that, like, I was really fortunate in many ways in that I was still relatively young and my mum and dad were super supportive of it. They didn't go, jack it in, lads, it's not working. That they let me have the time off and they lent me money for trains and would help find someone, you know, family members to stay with or whatever when I was traveling. So the support of that, I think if that hadn't been there, I probably would have jacked it in a lot earlier. That their understanding of like, maybe there's something in this, let's let him crack on a bit. And I don't think it was like let him get it out of his system thing. I think they probably believed more than me that there was something there.
Leaving that kind of secure environment to go off into a creative industry where there is kind of, it is the unknown. It's not an area that you've been heavily exposed to, yeah, at home. Like, how are you adapting to the challenge of that? And I guess the uncertainty that comes with it all and the changing lifestyle.
Yeah. I love that part. That was amazing. That was the best. To when it started coming down more regularly and eventually when I moved, I was excited, man. Like me and a friend used to come down for menswear trade shows or football matches or come to just like manufacturing meeting to kind of for a reason to come to London, shop events, the brands we loved, we used to come down and that felt like that was adventure, that was fun. That's probably where, like, there was no lack of confidence with me in that realm because that's just talking to people and not annoying them and showing that your perspective on stuff's interesting, which I quite enjoyed. And I think once that started happening, there was no real looking back for me then. It was like, I can do this. Like, you know, there might be a bit of a otherness about it that we're coming down and we're not from here and or we're not as well versed in how people talk to each other at these events and stuff. But more often than not, people quite liked that. People quite liked that we'd got the mega bus down to come to a Thursday evening to have four beers, look at some t-shirts and then go home. That was quite an interesting thing that people respected and liked, and that started to pay dividends. And you just start meeting people. I think I've said it in most of these interviews that I've done is that the only real reason I got by after that initial push into like, I can do this, was just by going for a pint with people and talking to them and putting myself out there, which came quite naturally. There was no reticence on my part then, because maybe it was naivety, but I just thought, like, oh, we'll just give it a go. Let's just chat. You know, I know as much about trainers as you do, even if you collect them and you live in central London, it doesn't make a difference to me.
Yeah, and inner confidence coming out there.
Eventually, yeah. Eventually, like, I just kind of I'd had those minor successes and just kind of backed myself and was like, yeah, this will be okay. This will be fine.
What's the worst that could happen? At what point does it start going from creative writing into the other areas of interest, and then like your career path, kind of adding those elements to it, like brand development and this kind of stuff?
I did Sabotage for a while. I wrote a little bit for Proper Mag, who were like the independent success story at the time. Menswear Mag from, I was going to say Manchester then, but it's Stockport. It's a very important distinction. Mark and Neil, who were running Prop at the time, allowed me to write for them. Seb, my co-founder of Mundial, we did a fanzine called Stand Against Modern Football, which was around that movement at the time where people wanted lower ticket prices, wanted more community-minded football. We had some minor success with that in terms of like backing campaigns like 20's Plenty for £20 away tickets and for kind of bringing like-minded people together, you know, AFC Wimbledon fans in the same room as what are they called? FC United, that's it. The other Man United. Getting all those people together and kind of creating a little bit of a hive mind within the sort of that space. We sort of fell out of love with that a little bit, because what modern football means is completely subjective to, you know, who you are, who you support. If you go and watch the Premier League, some people despise that. If you pay a certain amount, if you manage it, and it just became a bit untidy and sort of not aligned with what we'd wanted it to be. So we left that, and that's when we founded Mundial, completely in our spare time. As like an antidote to that, it was like, look, yes, there's problems with modern football, but let's pick out the things that we do still love, which are travel, community, tiny shin pads, black boots, all of that stuff that was at the start, that what Mundial was at the start. And like the crossover between fashion and football was just becoming a thing. And we were just like, how do we flip stand on its head and say, yes, there's terrible things in the modern game, but there's also brilliant things and you still love it. And that's where Mundial came from.
Where do you go from forming Mundial and doing this, you know, as a side project? And I can remember seeing, I can't remember where I would have seen this, probably Twitter on someone's account, maybe Seb's. And I'm only guessing it's Seb's because I think he's Ports, Hampton and Richmond.
He does. So
probably lives out
there. Yeah, he's in West London, yeah.
Yeah. So he's probably got the space for a garage, and he used to mail him out of a garage.
Oh, yeah, we used to do Seb's garage, yeah, man. So that was a little bit later, I think. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he did that from the first issue.
This is probably around 2017-ish, I'm talking now. So you're a few years in. Yeah, you are a few years in. You're at that point, you form Mundial. How does it go from, and this is, I'm actually like facing a bit of my own ego here, because there's always been some jealousy from my part in what that I couldn't do. I made, like, you know, founder of with Neil of a beautiful magazine that's got loyal readers and shared some wonderful content, but it just kind of stayed here. And yeah, there was definitely jealousy on my part, and for another reason that I didn't really kind of clock until recently, which is more like there was a group of you doing this and you're together and you're doing it with mates. And whilst I've kind of formed a group of like a community within MPLH, we are spread out, so there's none of that in real life kind of connection. And that's what I learned that I was looking for,
sure,
through kind of making MPLH. But I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there. I guess my question is, how do you go from starting this magazine with Seb and it becoming, well, a pillar within the football publishing community?
That's very kind. And I think you've answered the question you're asking. It was that we just, there was enough of us and we were all so bloody minded that if someone was out, someone wasn't up to it that day, there'd be someone to pick them up. There'd be, you'd kind of go for a pint and you'd come up with an idea and we'd push each other to the limit and beyond several times, and we'd come back and all of that great creative stuff, which anything I can think of, whether it's television, music, whatever, comes from that in-person camaraderie, arguments, creative process. We just did that all day, every day for a long time. And we had a diverse set of skill sets, and we had a pretty good age spread. You know, Seb and Owen a little bit older than me, and then Sam, who's another early member of staff, was younger again. And we kind of had that. We had different approaches to football. Seb was sort of a non-league fan. I was a Liverpool fan. Some of us were great at football, some of us aren't. Some of us played Sunday League, some of us didn't. There was this like great mix, and we just spent so many hours together that we forced each other to do it, and we all wanted to do it. And I knew this was my chance to not have to not work in this industry and to not have a boss, which I'm not excellent at, etc. So we all wanted it and needed it so much that the process came together, and it was brilliant and horrible and all of those things. But it was just that, it was just being in a room. You mentioned Seb's garage right at the top of that question. It was like, we used to go and post it, you know, we used to go when all the magazines were out, we used to go and pack and post them and put individual notes into certain ones and make sure everyone got them, and then all go to the pub afterwards and have dinner and drink together. And, you know, that is that for like almost 10 years was the reason we were successful. I think we probably dropped on, there's luck in there as well. We probably dropped in it, the fashion meets football lifestyle thing, exactly at the right time. I think we did it in a more accessible way than other people were doing it because of our backgrounds. And it was a mix of, yeah, living in each other's pockets for the best part of 6 years, a lot of hard work, a lot of desire for this to work and for this to be the time that this works for each one of us, and kind of pushing each other. So I think, you know, including yourself, there's a lot of incredible stuff out there. We were just lucky that the timing was right and everyone who was involved threw themselves completely into it and could do that at the time.
You mentioned earlier on the different angles that you're all looking at the game or coming at the game from. I guess that gives you a 360 perspective of what football is outside of your own lens, right? You as a Liverpool fan, you're like, Seb's looking at the game completely different to you. Somebody that's played the game more has got their own reference points, and you're bringing that all under one roof, learning from each other. And I guess, yeah, that's the secret sauce to why it works.
Yeah, I think so. I think in certain online communities in particular, I don't think it happens in person anywhere near as much, but I think there's... I think online, where it's like, if you don't like football in the same way that I like football, if you don't engage with football in the same way that I engage with it, you're a weirdo, you know, and your opinion doesn't count because you don't go home and away, or you wear a replica shirt, or you're into this type of football, or your team, or whatever. Whereas, like, actually on the ground, more often than not, nobody talks to each other in that way. I think that just happens online, and we managed to corner a certain type of football fan for sure that was growing in numbers and was into things and liked football culture, again, in sort of light inverted commas there, was into football culture and things around it. And it wasn't for everyone. Like our magazine, like, it wasn't a mass market product. It was about viewing football in a certain way, which was an amalgamation of all the ways that we did.
Working on that magazine, I guess working on anything in general, where are you most at home in terms of what it is you're creating?
I hardly write long form anymore. I probably do 2-3 pieces a year. I do like doing them, but it's probably not. I certainly wasn't the best at Mundial at doing them. There was a lot of better long form writers. I really like short form stuff. I think captions and social copy, I'm pretty good at. That was kind of where I lived in that. But also like ideation and creative concept and coming up with storytelling devices and whether it's for a brand or it's just for Mundial, I quite like seeking out those stories that were interesting and that felt universal but were happening in this very small corner of Scotland, Lancashire, America, wherever. And teasing that out was my favourite thing, because I think kind of in reference to what I said in my last answer, is that like, yeah, people enjoy football in different ways, but like we're broadly the same. An MLS, and you know, you can find something that appeals to an MLS fan that'll appeal to both of us as well. If you're into stories, if you're into football storytelling. So doing that and kind of creating something out of that and working with a photographer or a designer to tell that story was my favourite part. And we did that for brands for a long time. If that answers your question at all.
Yeah. Does that lead into your new route now?
I think so. I think so. I think what I really enjoyed in the early days and most of Mundial, in fairness, was that there's diversity of things that we were working on. You know, we'd be creating an exhibition for Umbro's 95th birthday while also running a Sunday league team and telling the stories around that, or while also creating a magazine and then going up to Leeds at the weekend to make a film for a brand up there about Leeds' charge back to the Premier League. That sort of diversity of and agility that we had of just like, let's do it, that's cool. We only need a mobile phone and Microsoft Word to tell that story. Let's go and do it. I'm enjoying doing that again across the kind of variety of brands that I'm working for now. And I do a lot less long form now, which leaves the time to do that, I think.
What you just said there about only needing a phone and Word to get this done, that hints at like a, come on, let's just go, let's just do it, let's just try this, let's just try that, and like a can-do attitude, not you know, the complete opposite of reasons why not to do something, which can often, I'm guilty of that myself, if I'm honest, that I maybe shouldn't do this because of whatever, I'll find an excuse because the confidence isn't there to do it. So where does that, I mean, this is like maybe you've got maybe, you know, this is being sprung on you because it's a few years to dig through, but where does that kind of come on, let's just do it, let's give it a go attitude come from? Is that something that's been present in you throughout childhood into adulthood that, you know, even gets you on the bus down to London and sabotage? Not worried about doing it, not doing it well, that's not the right word, but rather than thinking, oh, well, we want to go and do this, we're going to need X amount of budget to pay for this, and this. You're like, oh, well, let's just figure it out. We'll do it this way, and it's done.
Yeah. I think we probably just learned that lesson through Mundial. I think we've all worked in much bigger companies, which move a lot slower. And you see a great idea turned into something that's just not going to happen, or that gets stopped because of the process, or because there's no budget or whatever. Whereas when we were doing Mundial, at the very beginning, at least we were trying to fill a magazine with next to no money, so you just had to go and do it. And I think what we learned as we became a creative agency and stuff was that was our strength. Like, we've all worked in much bigger agencies and publishers and things like that. And as they stand now, those gigantic agencies want to, they have to justify every nine people on every nine person's salary who's working on the account, and they have to make it seem like they're worthy of this gigantic retainer they're on or whatever. So, and we were just like, well, we just want to do the work. We want to do the storytelling for Manchester City or whoever it was. We want to do it. So, like, we're not going to manufacture reasons not to. We're going to show you why you should give it to us, because we're better than anyone else and we're more agile than anyone else. And also that, like, you can just do it on the phone and Word, is because sometimes we had to, because we had no money. Like, we had to go and tell a story within our means, and we weren't as set up as some of the bigger magazines or the bigger publishers, but we always backed ourselves to do it better. So I think it came from Mundial. I think I've always had a bit of a let's find out element to it, to myself, sorry, because, yeah, like you said, I just used to come to London on a speculative meeting or whatever, but in terms of applying that to creative work, that all came through having to do it and wanting to do it that way with my colleagues at Mundial.
Having less means and, the bells and whistles that come with all of that, do you think that helps you channel into the your creative vein more cleanly, so to speak? Because you kind of you've got what you've got, and in most cases that was very little. So you're thinking harder, you're working harder to get that vision out.
Yeah, like I apply that to almost anything. I think that's the best way to be. I think it might seem a little bit of a strange comparison, but that old kind of mod adage of clean living under difficult circumstances, it still applies. It applies, like, the way you dress, the way you live, the way you eat. If you've got difficult circumstances impinging upon that, you have to be a bit more smart and a bit more savvy and a little bit more streetwise with it, and often the results are well better. If you're bloated and you've got more cash than sense and you nothing's ever been difficult for you, the output tends to be crap. As far as I've seen, you're not really working for it. You kind of there's no sense of being grateful for what you're doing. And we were never that. We were always so happy to get work. Like, some of the smallest bits of work we ever got that saved our wage bill at the end of the month were the most exciting to work on. And yes, clients are a nightmare, and we maybe didn't show it all the time, but like, that hunger and that desire and that need to treat every bit of work with the love that the piece before got, because you never know when it's going to go and you're never going to know when you're going to be back to square one, definitely brought the best out in us.
What does your process look like now? Am I right in saying you're solo?
Pretty much. I'm working with a friend of mine, and a friend of Mundial's, Jack, who runs Le Ballon in Paris. He was one of the first people. They were doing it slightly earlier than Mundial, like a small agile creative agency in Paris who did a bar for the Euros, have hosted all sorts of football tournaments. They've done collaborations with Patrick and loads of brands over the years. And he was kind of a solo entity, and we've kind of come together to apply what we've learned over the last 12, 15 years in football and help brands out. That's kind of on in the background. And then, yeah, I have my own work at the moment. I'm working for a couple of brands. I'm a head of brand at a sustainable football boot brand called Sukito. And we're just kind of, they've had a great start. They're a startup. They've had a brilliant first year. They've got professional footballers wearing their boots. They're doing incredible things with developing the first verified vegan football boot, which is on the market now. And I'm just trying to add a little bit of a storytelling layer to that. And then even more recently, I started work with Mitre, who everyone knows as the brand that did the Premier League ball for a long time. And it's now kind of diversified across different leagues across the world and is... As far as I'm concerned, it's the industry standard, but again, doesn't have that storytelling power of a Nike or Adidas that they used to. So those two are just me, and then the rest of my work and sort of output will be under Le Ballon with Jack.
I've still got a mitre triangle imprinted on my leg from when I was about 12.
Yeah, that's kind of what everyone remembers it for. Extremely hard footballs getting pelted at you in British weather.
Iconic though, and you're right. It doesn't have the prestige attached to it that it
exactly
deserves.
Like they've got the FA Cup, you know, the world's oldest cup competition, and but there's all sorts to be done there, and the product is right up there. It's brilliant. So there's lots to go at. It's exciting, and like I said, there's a bit of a diversity in those two brands alone in terms of what I need to do, and if I can do it with a phone and Microsoft Word, even better.
Keep those costs well down.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so what, how do you keep yourself fresh for these challenges and these projects? Like what keeps that kind of juice flowing?
You could ask some of my former colleagues. The juice probably wasn't flowing towards the end of my time at Montreal. You do get fatigued. There's more football on the television than ever. There's more bad news surrounding football than ever. But I think what I probably haven't done enough of over the last couple of years, which I'm trying to change, is the kind of like going and watching and playing football and being a part of the culture that I'm talking so much about. I think that's what separates, you know, there's billions of football fans now, and everyone's sort of got an opinion on VAR and transfers and all of the detritus that surrounds the game. But I think what separates football fans from football fans, if you catch my drift, is do you play it? Like, do you regularly partake in the game at whatever level, whether it's walking football right up to semi-pro? Do you do it? Because I think if you're doing that, you're showing that you've got a commitment and that you love the game enough to get yourself up and go and play. And do you go and watch it in the flesh? I think there's nothing wrong with watching football on television. It's incredible. I did it last night. But if you go, whether it's to a Premier League game or to your local non-league club, I think that gives you a completely different perspective again, and it also shows that your commitment to it. And I think we talk about this football culture landscape, or I try not to, but lots of people do, and how it links with lifestyle. The comparison I always use is we've had that with skateboarding, where the lifestyle of skateboarding, of Supreme and Palace and all these brands, and the aesthetic has overtaken the fact that at its core, skateboarding is a subculture, and how you can separate those people within that subculture. And I don't, so I sit in the other category, is do you skate or not? And they're the purists. They're the people who you get the most authentic love for skateboarding from. And I think in football, it's whether you play or whether you go and watch it live is where the action is. I was in Sunderland for Sunderland Newcastle at the weekend. It's the first weird time derby in 8 years. They really don't like each other. But being there was absolutely magic. Kind of experiencing it on the ground is what keeps me going, and kind of seeing what football means to people. Whether it's in Sunderland or in Ivory Coast next week, I don't think you can experience. I don't think you can be there and see these things happening and see what positive and sometimes negative impact the sport has on the people and not feel enthused to carry on.
Yeah, I imagine there was you feel the electricity in the air at a game like Sunderland Newcastle.
It was unbelievable. Right? I've been very fortunate to go to some football games, and it was one of the loudest that we've been to. Those people care.
Yeah. I think 09 did as well. Saw a few throwback tackles.
He was enjoying himself. Once you get him beat like that, you may as well make a mark somehow, right?
Yeah, they're free hits then. They're absolutely free hits. So moving into the area, I mean, you mentioned football landscape a few moments ago, and again, I'm conscious of time and keeping you, so I'll try and wrap this up. Do you feel a pressure looking at the work, your work with Mundial, do you feel a pressure with the work that you take on now to have that kind of broad impact to shape the landscape as you already have?
No, no, that's a fair question. It's quite a difficult one to answer. I love the work I'm doing now. I think we're going to do some great stuff with these brands. I think Le Ballon has a space to grow culturally and further than the impact it, the significant impact it's already had in the sort of grassroots meets football cool space. I think definitely I want to have an impact. I'm under absolutely no illusions, however, and I'd love to be proven wrong that I'm going to do something that's as important to people as Mundial again. I think what we did there, equal parts luck and hard work, was really right time, right place, right people, right skill set. And I think it sort of changed how a lot of people see football and how our readers interact with the game and how comfortable they feel talking about the things they're into. So I don't think I'm trying to, I think it'd be foolish to try and do that again. Everything I've learned over the last 10 years, I'll definitely inform that. I'll always try and make stuff good. The tone of voice will probably cross over a bit because I was such a big part of the Mundial tone of voice for so long. So there'll be stuff that you see that feels Mundial. I can't really help that. You know what I mean? I think when someone leaves a band and does a record on their own, it always kind of sounds similar to their band, right? Like, there's not much I can do about that. And I wouldn't want to change how I write or talk about football or create content. I want it to stay true to how I see the game. But I don't think... We went to Austin for South by Southwest earlier this year, and a guy came up to us, this incredible-looking guy, had like long hair and moustache. I think he was wearing a Man United top, Mundial socks, and he had a tattoo of an illustration from the kids' book we'd done. And we nearly burst into tears. We were like, this is amazing, like what an amazing moment. I don't think I'm going to be experiencing something like that again for a long time with what I'm creating now. That doesn't mean I'm not excited to do it. That doesn't mean it's not important, but we landed on something there that was really special, and to try and replicate it would be stupid.
I guess as long as you're creating work that makes you feel good, then that will show out in the work. That'll come out in the work.
Yeah, for sure. And I think having positive impact in football can be done in a variety of ways. I think there's a lot of negative things. It's terrible. I can't find the right word there, but you know what I mean? There's a lot of negative influence within football. It makes a lot of people unhappy a lot of the time, and the game continues to go in a way that disillusions people more. And more so if with these brands and with what we do with Le Ballon, we make even a slight impact in the other direction, I'll feel fulfilled and I'll feel happy that we're doing something good.
Fantastic. I think that feels like a very neat place to wrap it up, Dan. I really appreciate the time. And I guess this is usually with these episodes, I'm speaking with somebody whose work is the face of their social presence, and I see their face for the first time mm-hmm. when we jump on. With you, it's a little bit different. So I'm now putting a voice to the face rather than a face to the work. So yeah, like, thanks for spending the time. I really appreciate it. Great to learn more about your pathway into Mundial, the impact on you and the path out of it. Quite inspiring stuff as well. And
thanks, man.
Definite learning for me there with the reference to just getting it done.
Yeah, get it out, man. Especially on social media, like I'm like, it's just Instagram. I don't actually believe that. I really want the work to be good and brilliant, but sometimes just post it, man. And if it gets slightly less likes or nobody likes it, then do another one tomorrow. It is what it is. Get stuff out there.
Done is better than perfect, right? I'll let you crack on with your day, and getting that visa in the back pocket ready for your trip.
Thanks for reminding me. Appreciate it, Joe.
No worries, mate.
Take care, lad. Bye.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.